Good morning and welcome. Today, after yesterday's interview with Martin McGuinness on this program, Danny Morrison clashes with Peter Murta of the Irish Times over his account of events relating to the murder of Frank Hegarty. Just what was in the plume from the Twin Towers fires, and 10 years after the anthrax attacks, are we any better prepared? Just what will David Cameron face at the Tory party conference? A life too short, the tragedy of German goalkeeper Robert Enke. Why the struggling refugees of African famine will soon be faced with catastrophic flooding? We preview the Ireland-Italy game on Sunday, our Friday gathering on the events of the week, and there's more in the programme too. You can telephone us on 1850-715-900, text us on 51551, email us to dpk@rte.ie. During my interview with presidential candidate Sinn Féin's Martin McGuinness yesterday, I asked him about the killing of Frank Hegarty by the IRA in 1986, and I brought up an article in yesterday's Irish Times by Foreign Affairs editor Peter Murta. There have been some developments overnight. Peter Murta was on to us to say that the former Sinn Féin chief press officer Danny Morrison had contacted him to take issue with his version of events, and that both men engaged in a very heated phone call last night. Well, Peter Murta and Danny Morrison are with me now. Peter in Dublin and Danny Morrison in Belfast. You're very welcome to the programme. I want to, before we start, to briefly remind listeners of the Frank Hegarty case. He was believed to be an informer by the IRA, and in 1986 he was shot in the head by the IRA. His body was dumped on a country road. His family have claimed that Martin McGuinness befriended them, and in particular their mother Rose, in an attempt to encourage Frank Hegarty, who had fled Derry, to come home, promising Rose's son on bended knee that no harm would come to Frank if he returned to Northern Ireland. And this is something that Martin McGuinness has forcefully denied. I raised the issue with him on the programme yesterday. But have you questions to answer to the Hegarty family?
Absolutely not. No,
because
you
said it would be okay for Frank Hegarty to return home when he ended.
That is not true.
Well, that's what they say, the family
say. That is not true. And the Hegarty family know that. I could articulate in this interview exactly what happened. But if I did that, I think it would be very hurtful and indeed very damaging to the Hegarty family.
You have said that one member of the Hegarty family knows the truth.
Absolutely. And I am not going to put that person in a predicament. The family have been hurt enough, and I am not going to add to their grief.
Now, we come to the reason for Danny's call to Peter Murta last night in a moment, but first of all, Peter, for those who did not read the Irish Times yesterday, will you tell us about your involvement in this affair?
Well, I was a reporter for the Guardian newspaper at that time, and they dispatched me to Northern Ireland in the middle of 86 to follow up a number of stories, chief among them the Stalker affair, as it was known at the time. And the Hegarty killing happened, and I went to Derry, and there was fairly widespread rumours among journalists that the family were unhappy at what happened and were blaming Martin McGuinness. And so I went to the family home to see if they would talk to me, and this is what I wrote about yesterday, principally. And I said who I was, asked them would they talk to me about all of this, and I was brought into the family home. And I think I was there for, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes, for a fairly brief time, when there was a knock on the door. The door was opened, and as I recall it, two men came in. One stood in front of me and cut off my conversation, as it were, with the members of the family. Another one spoke to, I believe, a female who was there. And I was ushered out and into... there was a car outside. And I was invited to get into the car, and Martin McGuinness was in the car. And we had a brief chat, which went along the lines that, you know, the family was very upset, it wasn't a good time to talk to them, etc., etc. And as I wrote in the piece yesterday, it wasn't a negotiation, you know, the interview was terminated.
You felt that you'd been expelled by these people, the three people, Martin McGuinness and two others, from the Hegarty home?
Well, expelled is perhaps too...
Well, what word would you choose?
Well, I was taken out of the house, and you know, the interview was suppressed. I think that's a fairly a neutral way of putting it, in a factual way.
And can you recall how far you'd got with them in terms of their narrative?
Not really. No, I can't recall at this stage. It's clear that they wanted to talk. They were talking, but I can't recall how far down the road we had got with what their story was.
All right, Danny Morrison. Good morning to you in Belfast.
Good morning, Peter. Good morning.
You rang Peter last night. Why did you feel that you had to ring him?
Well, first of all, the only paper I get is the Irish Times, and my wife brings it home from work, and after dinner last night I was reading the Irish Times, and I had heard references to Peter's article throughout the day on the Southern media, including on your show yesterday. The head, you know, it was opposite the editorial and letters page, and it was headlined, McGuinness's links to IRA execution merits attention. So, I hadn't recalled Peter writing about it at the time, and Peter and I had lots of contact in the 80s. So, foolishly, I subscribed to the Guardian's website last night, which cost me almost £8, and I searched May, June, July, August, 86, and Peter hadn't filed this story of this sinister story of two heavies, that's what he uses the word, two heavies come in, he's taken outside, his story is suppressed, he's a security correspondent of the Guardian, man sitting in the back seat, who is the MLA for Derry, elected in 82. Peter, in his article, refers to him, you know, as the most senior figure in Derry, in both the IRA and Sinn Féin. And I was concerned before, because I wanted to write a letter for Saturday's Irish Times, and in case there was another explanation, that is, that Peter had failed the article, and that the Guardian, incredibly, didn't think that this was the scoop of the year. And maybe that was the explanation. So I tried to phone Peter several times last night, and I eventually got through it after 10 o'clock. And I asked him about the story. And I asked him, did you write about it at the time? And there was a huge pause. And he says, I don't think so. And I says, why not? And he says, I can't remember why I didn't write about it. And I explained to him the importance of what he was now saying. He could actually remember now, 25, 26 years later, how many kilometres the body of Frank Haggerty was from the border. So he said, why are you phoning me? And I said, well, let me tell you a story. And I said, a few years ago, another Irish Times journalist wrote a story about being in a club in West Belfast. He went to the toilet. There was two men in the toilet. Jerry Adams came into the toilet and says, shoot him, in reference to a local hood. And I challenged this journalist, why, did you write about it at the time? No. What club did it happen in? I can't remember. Jerry Adams, you knew who Jerry Adams was? Yes. So I put this to Peter, and Peter became very aggressive. And he used unparliamentary language and told me what to do with myself, and the conversation ended. And all that I wanted to do was to find out why he didn't write about it at the time, but now he does. And I think the question is still there.
All right, Peter, you didn't write about what Danny has described as the scoop of the year.
I think hardly.
No, but the MLA for Derry, as you would put it, intimidating you and kind of removing you from the pursuit of your story.
Well, in the great scheme of things at the time, not getting a story isn't a great story. It's a story now because the person concerned wishes to be head of state. Can I just go to the phone call last night, which Danny has gone through there? The phone call came in at 10 to 11 at night on my mobile phone. Danny described this story I wrote yesterday as hugely damaging, asked me why I didn't write at the time. I said I can't particularly remember why I didn't. And then he goes on to talk about this other incident he's described concerning another journalist. And then I asked him indeed why he was calling me. And he repeated again why you didn't write about this. And I said, Danny, there's many things that happened in the north of Ireland when I was up there that I didn't write about. I said, what's this all about? And he said, I am taping this phone conversation. And at that stage, I used a four-letter word to tell Mr. Morrison where he could go with himself, and I hung up.
Peter, it's actually the reverse. It was in response to your own parliamentary language and the fact that you said something else about me. You said, and if you're an honest and have ethics at all, you will stand over this. You said, how would you like it if I was to write material that you give me in confidence and off the record? Did you say that last night?
No, I said that I would write about an encounter I had with you, and if you like, I will. Yeah, or
well,
and
what did
now.
I say? I said, you go ahead and write what you like.
And you
and
said
it was
this,
then. It was then you turned around and told me, and I don't want to repeat the language, what to do with myself, and I turned around and I said to you, well, I've taped this conversation, which I hadn't, of course. But
I'm disappointed because I'd like to have a record of it, Danny.
Yeah. Well, I would
care about everything.
Journalists do it all the time, but I wouldn't do that. But I said it.
They don't do it all the time,
I was so appalled at his reaction, and I think his reaction was quite defensive, and it goes to the kernel of this. He can remember 25, 26 years later, great detail about being taken out of this house by two heavies, as the description he uses. There's a man sitting in the back of the car. who's Martin McGuinness, MLA for Derry, and he's just said that his story was suppressed, that his interview was suppressed. He doesn't write about it. I find that incredible. And his headline is, McGuinness's links to the IRA execution merits attention. And I felt that Peter's article merited attention. And he still, in my opinion, and I think that the voters decide, I don't think he has given a valid, credible explanation why he didn't file that story and why it only comes up 25, 26 years
ago. What do you say to Peter's argument that it wasn't particularly relevant
Pat,
at the
you're
time?
A journalist. You know that that is a scoop.
No, what I was going to say to you is that in the light of Martin now going for the presidency, it gets more news value than it might have had at the time. I'm just putting that to you, Danny.
Well, I think people's imaginations have become incredible during this campaign. All I'm putting to you, and I will let everybody else judge out there, here is the security correspondent for The Guardian goes to interview the family of a man who has been killed by the IRA. He has interfered in carrying out an interview with the widowed mother of this man and his sisters. Two heavies come in and stand in front of the family, tell him to get out of the house. He's taken out of the house. There's a man sitting in, it's almost the scene from Goodfellas. There's a man sitting in the back of the car.
Well, you said it.
There's a man sitting... No, you didn't say it at the time, but you're saying it now, and you do not... You lack credibility.
And are you saying it didn't happen?
I don't know. Are you saying it happened?
Yes, I am.
Why didn't you write about it?
Because it wasn't a particularly big story at the time.
It's
not
a huge
getting a
story.
Not getting
in the
it's a big story now,
it.
Danny. It's
no,
a big story
it,
now.
Peter, you know...
It prompts you to ring
you
me up
know,
at home close
you
to midnight.
You know in your heart... That was a huge story at the time. Ask any journalist who was contemporary with you then, Martin McGuinness and two thugs put you out of a house and stopped you from carrying out an interview. You're the security correspondent. The security correspondent. Right?
Danny, I'll ask you both, because you've far more experience on the ground than I would have in Derry or Belfast. The question of people being moved on, I mean, even in recent times, Paddy O'Gorman going up the Shankill Road would be advised, shall we say, you know, not to take a particular route or a line of questioning. He wouldn't regard it as a big deal. He might regard it as just par for the course. Is that the way it was then? That, you know, routinely people would be cancelled, as it were, no-go areas or places that they were not welcome.
That sort of thing was routine. I mean, you'd be moved on by all sorts of people, Republicans, loyalists, the police, the army. You didn't write about that sort of thing.
Danny?
It wasn't particularly noteworthy at the time. What makes it noteworthy now, exactly as you said, is the person involved, or one of the people involved, wishes to be president.
I want to get Danny's take on that.
Sure.
You know, that you know, as we were getting towards it, we didn't know it at the time, we were edging towards the end of the Troubles. That there were still situations where you would be given advice by people on any side of the Troubles where you as a journalist might or might not advance in safety.
Well, I'm sorry, Pat, but I don't appreciate the analogy. Peter wasn't on the Shankill Road. He was in Shantallow. He was a security correspondent for The Guardian. Mm. He claims he was intimidated by two heavies, Martin McGuinness, sat in the back seat of a car, and basically... The subtext of his story is he was told to clear off, and he doesn't write about it at the time. I think that that's a story. Now, I was editor on Foblock at the time. Mm-hmm. To me, that would be a story. I would have been on the radio at the time getting grilled about the way this journalist was treated if he had published that
cutting
story.
To the heart of the matter, from James in Capra, he says, Peter Murdoch is one of the most respected journalists in Ireland. Please ask Danny, why would Peter make this story up? I mean, what motivation do you ascribe to Peter?
Well, there's things called false memory syndrome. I don't know. Peter's the one who wrote the story. Peter's the one who has now got the graphic memory, but hadn't the next day after it happened.
Danny, with respect, it's not particularly graphic. I don't describe what was said to me in the room.
You do?
No, hang on. Whoa.
I have the article in front of me. You want me to quote?
Give me a second, please, Danny. You talk about the detail of where the body was found. That's a matter of public record where the body was found. I do not report the conversation because at this 25 years removed, I can't remember. But I do report the bare bone facts of what happened.
Did you fail the story?
I've answered that question. I told you no, I didn't, because didn't at that time it wasn't particularly important. It is important now, as your
it was a huge story
as your late
well,
night phone call.
Let's agree to disagree. I believe that it was a huge story at the time. I can't believe you didn't file the story if it happened. You say that it wasn't important. You say that it wasn't important and you didn't file it. You were a security correspondent for The Guardian.
I wasn't actually. I was working on the Stalker story, which was much more important. You know, and I don't appreciate getting phone calls late at night.
I get phone calls from the press.
No.
You phone people. I get phone calls from the journalists at all hours. Please, don't give me...
Yeah, when you're a press officer for Sinn Féin.
I'm not a press officer. I was.
Mm.
Is it possible that the events as they are recounted are actually true on both sides, that Martin McGuinness says there's another side of the story which he will not tell us because he doesn't want to embarrass one member of the Hegarty family whom he says knows the truth, but that he was aware of what was being said about him at the time of the death of Frank Hegarty, that he was being put in the frame, and given a family were bereaved and were likely to say all sorts of things, that he wanted to stop things in their tracks, that he felt he was being maligned, and intervened at that moment. I said, come back and talk to them in a few months' time when maybe they will have more distance and see the truth of it as he saw it. Is that a possible scenario?
Are you speaking to me?
Yeah, Daddy, yeah.
Well, you're recreating a scenario there.
Well, I don't know. Martin told me yesterday he has no memory of the incident at all.
Exactly. Whereas Peter does have. And my point is this. Are you more likely to vote for Martin McGuinness having read that feature, prominent feature, yesterday, or less likely?
Well, I don't know. That's up to the electorate.
Well,
they've got the facts. They can make up their own mind.
Exactly. And I'm glad that I've had this opportunity to ask you why you didn't print the Scoop of the Year.
Well, I don't think it was the Scoop of the Year, Danny, with respect.
All right, a number of people saying it would have been an enormous scoop, a journalist being threatened by gunmen.
Well, they weren't gunmen, in fairness.
Another one said the journalist is totally unbelievable. Why would he have not written about it at the time?
There are lots of things. I had my car hijacked once in Creggan, in Derry, by a youth with a gun. I didn't write about that. Any journalist who is in Northern Ireland has lots of stories that don't add up to much at the time. It's when you look back, you remember things.
All right, we will leave it there. Look, thank you both for joining us. Danny Morrison, thank you for joining us from Belfast. And Peter Murta, thank you for joining us in Dublin.
Thank you.